The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 4, The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Chapter 6, Purification, the Lower Mentality. We have to deal with the complex action of all these instruments and set about their purification. And the simplest way will be to fasten onto the two kinds of radical defect in each, distinguish clearly in what they could consist, and set them right. But there is also the question where we are to begin. For the entanglement is great. The complete purification of one instrument depends on the complete purification, too, of all the others. And that is a great source of difficulty, disappointment, and perplexity. As when we think we have got the intelligence purified, only to find that it is still subject to attack and overclouding, because the emotions of the heart and the will and sensational mind are still affected by the many impurities of the lower nature, and they get back into the enlightened buddhi and prevent it from reflecting the pure truth for which we are seeking. But we have, on the other hand, this advantage that one important instrument sufficiently purified can be used as a means for the purification of the others. One step firmly taken makes easier all the others and gets rid of a host of difficulties. Which instrument, then, by its purification and perfection, will bring about most easily and effectively, or can aid with the most powerful rapidity, the perfection of the rest? Since we are the spirit enveloped in mind, a soul evolved here as a mental being in a living physical body, it must naturally be in the mind, the antakarana, that we must look for this desideratum. And in the mind, it is evidently by the buddhi, the intelligence, and the will of the intelligence, that the human being is intended to do whatever work is not done for him by the physical or nervous nature, as in the plant and the animal. Pending the evolution of any higher supramental power, the intelligent will must be our main force for effectuation, and to purify it becomes a very primary necessity. Once our intelligence and will are well purified of all that limits them and gives them a wrong action or wrong direction, they can easily be perfected, can be made to respond to the suggestions of truth, understand themselves and the rest of the being, see clearly and with a fine and scrupulous accuracy what they are doing, and follow out the right way to do it without any hesitating or eager error or stumbling deviation. Eventually, their response can be opened up to the perfect discernings, intuitions, inspirations, revelations of the supermind, and proceed by a more and more luminous and even infallible action. But this purification cannot be effected without a preliminary clearing of its natural obstacles in the other lower parts of the antakarana. And the chief natural obstacle running through the whole action of the antakarana, through the sense, the mental sensation, emotion, dynamic impulse, intelligence, will, is the intermittence and the compelling claim of the psychic prana. This, then, must be dealt with. Its dominating intermissions ruled out, its claim denied, itself quieted, and prepared for purification. Each instrument has, it has been said, a proper and legitimate action, and also a deformation or wrong principle of its proper action. The proper action of the psychic prana is pure possession and enjoyment, bhoga. To enjoy thought, will, action, dynamic impulse, result of action, emotion, sense, sensation. To enjoy too, by their means, objects, persons, life, the world, is the activity for which this prana gives us a psychophysical basis. A really perfect enjoyment of existence can only come when what we enjoy is not the world in itself or for itself, but God in the world. When it is not things, but the ananda of the spirit in things that forms the real essential object of our enjoying, and things only as form and symbol of the spirit, waves of the ocean of ananda. But this ananda can only come at all when we get at and reflect in our members the hidden spiritual being. And its fullness can only be had when we climb to the supramental ranges. Meanwhile, there is a just and permissible, a quite legitimate human enjoyment of these things, which is, to speak in the language of Indian psychology, predominantly sattvic in its nature. It is an enlightened enjoyment principally by the perceptive, aesthetic, and emotive mind. Secondarily only by the sensational, nervous, and physical being, but all subject to the clear government of the buddhi, to a right reason, a right will, a right reception of the life impacts, a right order, a right feeling of the truth, law, ideal sense, beauty, use of things. The mind gets the pure taste of enjoyment of them, rasa, and rejects whatever is perturbed, troubled, and perverse. Into this acceptance of the clear and limpid rasa, the psychic prana has to bring in the full sense of life and the occupying enjoyment by the whole being, bhoga, without which the acceptance and possession by the mind, rasa grahana, would not be concrete enough, would be too tenuous to satisfy altogether the embodied soul. This contribution is its proper function. The deformation which enters in and prevents the purity is a form of vital craving, the grand deformation which the psychic prana contributes to our being, is desire. The root of desire is the vital craving to seize upon that which we feel we have not. It is the limited life's instinct for possession and satisfaction. It creates the sense of want. First, the simpler vital craving of hunger, thirst, lust, then these physical hungers, thirst, lust of the mind, which are a much greater and more instant and pervading affliction of our being, the hunger which is infinite, because it is the hunger of an infinite being, the thirst which is only temporarily lulled by satisfaction, but is in its nature insatiable. The psychic prana invades the sensational mind and brings into it the unquiet thirst of sensations, invades the dynamic mind with the lust of control, having, domination, success, fulfillment of every impulse, fills the emotional mind with the desire for the satisfaction of liking and disliking, for the reeking of love and hate, brings the shrinkings and panics of fear and the strainings and disappointments of hope, imposes the tortures of grief, and the brief fevers and excitements of joy, makes the intelligence and intelligent will the accomplices of all these things, and turns them in their own kind into deformed and lame instruments, the will into a will of craving, and the intelligence into a partial, a stumbling, and an eager pursuer of limited, impatient, militant prejudgment and opinion. Desire is the root of all sorrow, disappointment, affliction. For though it has a feverish joy of pursuit and satisfaction, yet because it is always a straining of the being, it carries into its pursuit and its getting a labor, hunger, struggle, a rapid subjection to fatigue, a sense of limitation, dissatisfaction, an early disappointment with all its gains, a ceaseless morbid stimulation, trouble, disquiet, ashanti. To get rid of desire is the one firm, indispensable purification of the psychical prana. For so we can replace the soul of desire with its pervading emissions in all our instruments by a mental soul of calm delight, and its clear and limpid possession of ourselves and world and nature, which is the crystal basis of the mental life and its perfection. The psychical prana interferes in all the higher operations to deform them, but its defect is itself due to its being interfered with and deformed by the nature of the physical workings in the body, which life has evolved in its emergence from matter. It is that which has created the separation of the individual life in the body from the life of the universe, and stamped on it the character of want, limitation, hunger, thirst, craving for what it has not, a long groping after enjoyment, and a hampered and baffled need of possession. Easily regulated and limited in the purely physical order of things, it extends itself in the psychical prana immensely, and becomes, as the mind grows, a thing with difficulty limited, insatiable, irregular, a busy creator of disorder and dis-ease. Moreover, the psychical prana leans on the physical life, limits itself by the nervous force of the physical being, limits thereby the operations of the mind, and becomes the link of its dependence on the body and its subjection to fatigue, incapacity, disease, disorder, insanity, the pettiness, the precariousness, and even the possible dissolution of the workings of the physical mentality. Our mind, instead of being a thing powerful in its own strength, a clear instrument of conscious spirit, free and able to control, use, and perfect the life and body, appears in the result a mixed construction. It is a predominantly physical mentality limited by its physical organs and subject to the demands and to the obstructions of the life in the body. This can only be got rid of by a sort of practical, inward, psychological operation of analysis, by which we become aware of the mentality as a separate power, isolated for a free working, distinguish too the psychical and the physical prana, and make them no longer a link for dependence, but a transmitting channel for the idea and will in the buddhi, obedient to its suggestions and commands. The prana then becomes a passive means of effectuation for the mind's direct control of the physical life. This control, however abnormal to our habitual poise of action, is not only possible. It appears to some extent in the phenomena of hypnosis, though these are unhealthily abnormal, because there it is a foreign will which suggests and commands, but must become the normal action when the higher self within takes up the direct command of the whole being. This control can be exercised perfectly, however, only from the supramental level, for it is there that the true effective idea and will reside, and the mental thought mind, even spiritualized, is only a limited, though it may be made a very powerful, deputy. Pausing mid-page 658, to be continued to completion in the next reading.